Chapter 16. The Tide and the Reckoning. Charlie looked at the big mule. Oh yes, Canaan would, he told himself. He went to the animal, grabbed the reins, and heaved himself into the saddle. Though the boy clucked to him and nudged him with his heels, Canaan refused to move an inch. How, then, to get him across? Charlie thought hard. After a long moment, a memory came to him of an artilleryman he'd seen in Culpeper dealing with a horse that wouldn't pull a wagon. He had blindfolded the animal and hauled him along by force until he'd gotten the idea. Charlie dismounted, whipped off his coat, and tied it over Canaan's eyes. Come on, you mule, he told the animal. We can't let her stay here, and there isn't anybody at the Hodders who can help her now. Slowly, Canaan came forward until his hooves touched the icy water. Then he reared, pawing the air above Charlie's head with his big iron-shod hooves. The boy barely dodged them as they came crashing down. Gritting his teeth, Charlie pulled on Canaan's bridle again, shouting, Come on, you critter! We got to get wet! This time he managed to get the big mule down in the stream to his fetlocks and to Charlie's waist. There Canaan stopped. The thrust of the bitterly cold current was powerful. Without Canaan behind him and the main force of the swollen creek, Charlie knew he'd be swept off his feet. Shouting all the cuss words he'd learned at Culpeper Camp and praying too, Charlie was able to pull the mule another 5 feet through the muddy water until it reached up to the animal's belly. Here the mule halted once more, while Charlie, who was in the water to his shoulders now, had to grab at the horn of the saddle until he felt a submerged rock with his feet. "Canaan! Canaan!" he yelled. "Keep going!" "Canaan! Canaan!" cried Jerusha Brent from the other bank 30 feet away. At her voice the mule moved forward into deeper water, and all at once was swimming. His quick movement made Charlie lose his grip on the saddle horn and go under the torrent for a moment. Then he came up, sputtering, as the mule went past him, swimming, slantwise, carried along by the current. Canaan's long black tail floated in the water behind him, drifting in the boy's direction. Charlie caught hold of it and held tight for his life, fearing the jagged rocks that stuck up in the bubbling water. "Canaan! Canaan!" came the old woman's voice as the still blindfolded mule struggled in the creek. And then, kicking powerfully, Canaan swam into quieter water on the other side. He came up dripping onto the bank 50 feet or so from where Granny Bent lay. The moment he felt the bottom under his own feet, Charlie let go of the animal's tail and waded up out of the water. The first thing he did was take the blindfold off Canaan's eyes and led him up to his mistress. Then he knelt down beside her to ask, "Are you hurt bad? I went to the Hodders, then I came looking for you. How long have you been here?" Her face was pale and her eyes sunken. "I hurt my leg. I've been here 2 days and nights. I fell off Canaan and got over here, but he went back." "Can you ride him, Granny?" "I don't know, Charlie. I'll have to be tied on." He nodded grimly. He reached into his pocket and found his knife. Then he felt for Johnny's watch. It was there, too, but it had gotten wet. It would never run again. Well, he'd have it as a keepsake forever now, anyhow. He told Jerusha Bent, "I'll cut the reins and tie you on with them. I can lead Canaan by the bridle if you tell him the way to get home on this trail. Can you get up?" "I'll try to." After slicing the reins from the bridle and then cutting it into two pieces, Charlie boosted the old woman to her feet. He saw that she favored one leg. He led her to a moss-covered boulder and aided her to mount it. Then he brought Canaan up to her and hoisted her into the saddle. With one piece of rein, he tied her feet together under the mule's belly, and with the other fastened her wrist to the horn. "Hang on tight," Charlie told her as he led the mule forward. Granny Bent gave the directions in such a weak voice that Charlie could scarcely hear which way to lead the mule. Sometimes he thought they must be lost as they threaded their way through laurel trees, but in an hour's time they came out on a slope from which he could see her farm. Canaan, not as weak as his mistress, began to move faster now, scenting familiar pastures. Charlie ran beside him with one hand on Granny Bent's knee to steady her. When they came to the cabin door, Canaan halted of his own accord. "I lost my pistol in the creek," said the old woman dreamily with her eyes closed. When she opened them, her gaze lowered to the mountain lion stretched in tawny death before her porch. "Charlie!" she exclaimed in wonder. "I shot her. I had to."
"You shot the painter?"
"Yes, ma'am, with the old long rifle. She came 2 nights in a row and killed most of your hens and the rooster. I saved 3 of them in Malindi. They're inside. The critter jumped me this morning, so I had to shoot her." For a long moment, old Jerusha stared over Charlie's head. Then a big smile creased her pale face. Shaking her head, she laughed and said, "Well, ain't you the one, though? All in one day, you shoot an ornery critter like this, and you save an old woman's life. Ain't you the beatenest, bravest one, Mr. Skedaddle?" "It's Quinn, Granny. Charles Stephen Quinn. That's my real name." He turned scarlet at her praise. "Let's get you down off Canaan and inside the house." "Just as you say, Mr. Quinn. Get me to bed and cover me up so I'll get warm. And after you change into some dry clothes and see to the goose and hens, come out here and skin this critter and stretch her hide on the shed wall. I want folks to see her and know who done it. I'll mend fast once I get some yarbs inside me." When Charlie got her inside the cabin and into bed with three quilts over her, he built up the fire and shooed Melindy and the chickens out to fend for themselves for a time. Now Granny Bent was his chief duty. Without asking her for orders, he boiled water for sassafras tea, then fed it to her spoonful by spoonful. After that, he brought her cornbread, which he crumbled for her in the water. He had eggs in a basket in the lean-to he could boil for supper. Once she'd finished eating, Jerusha told him, "Skin that critter before sundown, Charlie. Just cut her up the middle and along the legs. You don't need the head. Bury that." "Yes, ma'am, I will." Now he told her about going to the hotter place and hearing she'd left. "I took the rifle with me when I left here to hunt for you. I couldn't get down the ravine where you were carrying it, so I hid it in the hollow tree that was there. Do you want me to go after it first?" Her hand grasping his arm, she said, "Get it back here tomorrow, or when you go tell the Hotters I've been found. They got a baby girl there now." "Granny, Jacob Hotter wasn't there. He was at the hollow. I talked to his pa, I think. When Jacob finds out, he might come here." "He will, Jacob will. So you talk to his pa?" "Yes, I tried to talk like you do." "That was right bright of you." And with these words, her eyes closed, and suddenly she fell asleep. Now Charlie went outside to take the bridle and saddle off Canaan and lead him to the shed to his fodder. After that, he went to look at the panther. In spite of Granny's instructions, he had no idea how to start skinning her. As he stood there staring at the dead animal, he saw Jacob Hotter, trailed by a blue tick hound, riding on a mule toward the cabin. Charlie stood up and waited for the man. As he dismounted, Hotter asked, "Where's Granny Bent? I see her rag still up on the porch." Charlie jerked his thumb toward the cabin. "I fetched her home. She's still sleeping. She fell off her mule. Nothing's busted. She's just tuckered out." Charlie held his breath. What would Hotter think of his mountain talk? The man only nodded. "That's what I reckoned. She must have fell somewheres. When I get back to my place, Pa told me you're coming. I tracked her to the creek by the old bridge. I found her pistol by the bank, and I'm fetching it back to you." He opened his coat, took the pistol from his belt, and handed it to the boy. Now he stared at the dead mountain lion as he scratched his chin. He went over to the huge cat, looked at her head and paws, then said slowly, "For certain, this is old Wryfoot. Granny must have been pert enough to shoot this critter with Isaac Pa's old rifle when she got home." "No, I done that before I come to your place."
"You did?"
The man's heavy brows rose in surprise. "Yes, sir, she jumped me. Had the old rifle, I shot her. I'm going to skin her, Granny says to." Charlie seized his opportunity for help now. "I never done that to anything so big as this, just to squirrels and rabbits." The man laughed and said, "I reckon I ought to help you then."
"I'd be obliged to you."
Charlie grinned at the mountaineer. Hotter hadn't praised him for his courage, but he could see the respect in his eyes. Kneeling together, the boy and the man skinned the panther, buried the carcass, as it was unfit to eat, and stretched the rank-smelling golden hide with nails to the wall of the shed. Near sunset, Hotter left to go back home, but not before telling Charlie news he longed to hear. That morning, Hotter had talked with the first man to reach Herne Hollow since winter began. He found out that the Johnny Rebs had been whipped twice in Tennessee, and that Abe Lincoln had been elected president for the second time. A Yankee general by the name of Sherman had taken Atlanta and then gone eastward across the state of Georgia and all the way to the ocean. Now he was marching north along the Carolinas to come up behind General Lee, who was still bottled up in Petersburg and Richmond. With blue-belly Yankees north of him and rising fast toward him from the south, General Lee was in trouble. Charlie's heart swelled with joy at what the mountaineer told him, though he kept his face expressionless throughout the telling. When Hotter was out of sight, Charlie took the white rag off the porch post and went back inside the cabin to see how Granny Bent fared. He found her lying quietly, but with her eyes open.
As he pulled a chair up to her bed, she asked, "Wasn't that Jake Hodder out there with you?"
"Yes, he helped me skin the painter. He also told me what's going on in the war."
"What'd that be, Charlie, that the South is losing?"
"That's right, Granny," he replied, and he told her every word Hodder had spoken.
When he had finished, she only nodded and did not smile.
She sighed as she told him, "I don't take no pleasure in all this war, though I want to see the North win out. Good men are dying on both sides. It's fool's work. I told you before, some men dote on it 'cause it makes 'em feel brave. And they got to have other willies around 'em when they do their killin' to see it and give 'em praise for doing it. You might have been right to skedaddle before you did killin', little as you are."
Jolted by these last words, Charlie leaned forward, lowered his head, and put it on his arms, which were folded on his knees. He said thickly, "I skedaddled, like you say, but before I did, I picked up a musket and shot and killed a Reb."
"You did?"
"Yes, I shot him, and he fell backward, and then I ran. All the time I keep seeing his face and my friends' faces, too. One of them was killed. The other one, I hope, was only wounded, but I'll never know for sure."
"Oh, Charlie, that was a bad time for you, and you never talked about it before. Tell me about shooting the Confederate now."
"He had a brown beard. I shot him in the shoulder, and he fell down."
"In the shoulder? Not in the chest or head?"
"That's right. I saw the blood." Jerusha's old, wrinkled hand came up to pat his head. "You didn't kill him, Charlie. Not if he got hit where you say you shot him."
"I didn't?"
Charlie lifted his head, relief flooding his mind. "But I did run away, and that was a bad thing. It shows I'm a coward."
"Maybe you was then, but nobody dare call you a coward after the brave things you done today. You killed the critter, and you saved me with nary a soul to see what you did, and that's what makes them deeds even braver. You got the grit to make your way in the world just fine. You could leave here tomorrow and go over the hills to the west if you have a mind to."
"So soon?
Leave now?"
The thought had not occurred to Charlie.
Yes, he supposed he could. Granny Bent was sick and couldn't keep him here now if he wanted to go. Thanks to his good ear for music and speech, he could mimic mountain talk well enough to get through the hills by pretending to be a native of these parts. He knew the road westward to Herne Hollow that would get him out of the Blue Ridge country. He pondered, looking about the cabin. Then he stared into the old woman's calm, dark eyes. There was no command in them that tried to hold him against his will, nor was there a plea for him to stay because of her feebleness. That wouldn't be her way. He made up his mind. "If it's all the same to you, I'd like to stay for a while longer."
"And I'd be honored to have you under my roof, Charlie Stephen Quinn."
Charlie smiled. No, he couldn't leave her now. Mountain folks would come to help her out, but he didn't want that. He'd tend to her himself. That'd be the right thing to do. The thing the man of a family ought to do. She'd sort of turned into his family, his grandma. He'd never had a grandma up in New York, because the old folks in his family were still in Ireland. And now he had a granny here, a mountain one.